It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
No, it is not. It is time for Brian Bulaga and Jason Wilde. Yeah, and that means Brian Bulaga, because he's so nice, gets to do the intro. Doc, take it away.
Jason, good evening. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Please, Dash. And then we continue through the normal order of events.
Oh, you're at a track meet, and there's someone really loud behind you. Is that right, Jason?
There is. And Maddie's doing the pole vault, and they're not starting the initial height at a low enough height for three of the competitors in this conference meet to even clear it. So Maddie's going to have to get a PR just to advance from the first jump. So I'm a little irritated. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me logistically, but hey, I'm just an overprotective dad. How are things with you guys?
Good. I thought someone else was talking to me through the phone. I was like, who's talking to me?
Yeah, he's I gotta tell you, he's a lot. He's like Bill Jarts, but not quite as charming as Bill Jarts.
Jason, I this whole Elgton Jenkins thing, obviously the OTA process, I mean, you know, Homer and I have been talking about it. I mean, you know, I know, like, the OTAs is what it is. Do you see this thing actually stretching to the mandatory minicamp? Do you think he's going to take it that far? Or do you see him, like, coming back for that and then being like, my foot hurts or my back hurts and I'm not going to do that, but I'm here, so I'm not getting fined? Like, how do you see that kind of playing itself out?
Yeah, if I was him, I would report with a sore hamstring, right? I don't think that that's... If I'm him, I want to leverage this as best I can.
Enjoy your
recovery. And you guys have heard me say this before. They have next to no leverage as players. Well, they've based their entire offensive line plan on him playing center. Steno did not come out and say he's competing with Jacob Monk. So it's not as if, you know, they've said he's the guy. So I would leverage that if I'm him, and I'd have my arm, like Rodney Dangerfield in Caddyshack, right? Like I wouldn't do this if I'm him, because, you know, it's rare that something catastrophic happens during OTAs, but we've seen it happen, right? We've seen serious injuries happen across the league. He's got no guaranteed money. And so I would not want to risk that. Now, I suppose in one way, if you get injured during OTAs, you know, they're going to be on the hook for what they owe him. But the fact of the matter is where he's at, I don't think he should be. I would not participate if I was him.
And Jason,
I would show up and not participate.
Jason, I'd ask both you and Brian, like, the teammates would be fine with that, right? I mean, they don't.
Yes.
They understand the game is played, and is that right? You like a player, you know who he is, and in general, you defend whatever players try to do to get more money.
Yeah, as Jason said, yeah, for sure. There's no questioning. The guys aren't worried about Elgton. And you never really question what guys are doing to take care of themselves, right? I mean, especially this time of the year, right? There's no games being played, and Jason always says it. No one's winning a Super Bowl right now. So, guys aren't upset, certainly aren't upset at him right now, and wouldn't be upset about him if he takes this thing all the way into minicamp. No, for sure.
No, the time that guys are upset are like when Sterling Sharp held out on the eve of the opening of the season, or when Romeo Doubs didn't show up for work and didn't tell anybody last year. Like, that's the stuff that guys get upset about. But now it's part of doing business. It's about figuring out a way to get your value. And again, I can't emphasize this enough, and I don't want to speak for Elgton, but Elgton is not out here looking for a 4-year, $77 million deal that matches what they gave Aaron Banks. He wants existing money in his contract guaranteed, so he has some security the next 2 years. And I don't think anybody on that team would take issue with that.
No, I don't think so. So within the wide receiver room, I mean, I got asked on KBN, and I thought it was an interesting question. Do you think, besides, you know, we talk about Dobbs. I mean, obviously, we're going to see how that plays out. Do you think it's going to be more important for, which I answered Reed, but I want to get your answer and get your take on it. Do you think it's more important that Reed has a bigger year than it is Golden, or do you think the other way around?
Well, they asked me that. Right, they asked me that same question, and first. I would say very simply, they just need one of them, right? I don't care if it's Wicks. In fact, I still, you know, I may be, and I've done this before, once upon a time before Brian Bulaga came along and Mike Sherman was the head coach, I was convinced that someday the light would go on for Robert Ferguson, and I'm still waiting. He had a okay career in Green Bay as a wide receiver, but he never became a consistent player for them. And it was always, you would see these flashes and then you would not, that was it. You would see the flashes and that was it. And in, you know, Wicks's case, we've definitely seen really good flashes. Whether or not he can put it all together and be, you know, a 65, 70 catch guy, I still believe that he's capable of that. I really do. And I keep going back to the fact that by all these different metrics made by people smarter than me that the league does look at, he gets open better than anybody they have and more consistently and by more space than anybody they have. So when I look at that, I view that as he's a guy who, you know, if he puts it all together, and I thought he caught the ball much better in the second half of last season, this could be a breakout year for him. But, you know, we've seen Reed be productive to a greater degree than what we've seen from Wicks. I don't care how much we like Matthew Golden, and I've certainly looked at plenty of highlights of him, but you were on the team in 2014. We know what Devontae Adams became. Now, he was a second-round pick, not a first-round pick, but the fact of the matter is that he had moments of sheer brilliance, and then he had moments where he was a non-factor. And when I look at Golden, that could be his first season, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think expecting him to come out, and I've seen some early predictions already from people, you know, that have suggested that he's going to be, you know, the leading rookie receiver in the NFL. Maybe. I would think Tutterell and McMillan is going to have more opportunities in Carolina. I don't know what Emeka Abuka is going to have. And then remember, Puka Nacua was the guy from a draft class, which, what was he, a fifth-round pick? I mean, just because you're a first-round pick doesn't guarantee you're going to be super productive. So I think there's going to be some – I would predict that there's going to be some moments of really, really good football from Matthew Golden. But at the same time, I would say that he's a –
you have 20 minutes.
There could be any of those guys that end up going through this and being really productive. And it just has to be somebody. It doesn't have to be anyone specific.
All right, Jason, the best rookie wide receiver for the Packers that you can remember that jumps out as to how good the player was right away.
Jennings was really good right away. He was really good right away. I remember he missed the last game. I think it was in Chicago, his rookie year in 06. I think his wife was having a baby. But, like, he was so good as a rookie. I always thought James Jones gets short shrifted for how good he was as a rookie in 2007. I mean, I think he had, like, 47 catches. But it just, again, rookies are all different. Like, I look at, God, this guy is really loud. I look at Jordy Nelson. He was basically a non-factor. I look at Randall Cobb, who had that big opener against New Orleans in the opener in 2011, where he had a kickoff return for a touchdown. He caught a touchdown. You know how many catches he had as a rookie in 2011? Now, I know they had a ton of talent there. But he had 25 catches on the season.
That's horrible.
25. But he had Jones and Jennings and Nelson and Driver all on his team too. So that factors in. And the Packers have a lot of guys. So that I wouldn't be surprised if Golden's numbers are pushed down because he's not quite there yet, even though he's a first-round pick.
All right, Bulaga, Doc, the best rookie offensive lineman. You can't count yourself.
Brian Bulaga.
I would never count myself. Best rookie O lineman. I mean, he's still in the building right now. I think it was Helton. I think Elton was the best rookie lineman that I've seen. I mean, he stepped in and played. I mean, Lane got hurt week one. Elton stepped in and went the rest of the way. I mean, Elton was very impressive. I mean, Dave obviously played his entire rookie year at left tackle, but Dave was far from a polished product. We'll just put it that way, right? Like, Dave took it, like, he made big strides that offseason and looked much better as a left tackle. He put on weight. He looked much more comfortable. Elton looked very comfortable once he got that starting job in week two. So, I mean, I would say Elton, to me, was probably the most impressed. And then, you know, also Corey Lindsley. But Corey got hurt early on and then didn't get the job back until essentially – you know, J.C. Tretter got hurt in Minnesota, and he got put on the PUP, and Corey came off the PUP. So, like, they, like, swapped. It was really weird. But Corey was also very impressive as a rookie, but Elton did it for the duration, essentially.
Because I want to ask both of you, like, what you want to tell people to be fair to expect from a player. First round or ending round, like, you know, they can be great or – you just don't really know, or what's the one line you'd each want to give fans about rookie expectations? Jason.
Yeah, rookies are rookies. It doesn't matter if they're a first-round pick or a seventh-round pick. There's a learning curve, and some of them, you know, hit the peak of that curve faster than others. Brian Bulaga is one of the examples. David Bakhtiari, I mean, I remember a conversation with him at the end of the season in 2013, and he said his biggest goal was for people to say he had a great season, not he had a great season for a rookie. And he knew that he had a great season for a rookie on that grading scale. And Corey Lindsley is a great example, Brian. Like, you know, by the end of that 2014 season, he was playing really well, but you're right. You know, there was a competition with him and Tretter for a while, and then the injuries for both of them. Like, the reality is that it takes a while. And you know, look at what Jordy Nelson became. Look at what Randall Cobb became. They weren't productive as rookies. It's just not. It's not like flipping a light switch. So it may be Matthew Golden. It may be Savion Williams that has more impact. But the expectations that come with being a first round pick should not be so harsh that we're going to brand him a failure if he has 38 catches for 487 yards. Like, just this is rookies are all different, but they all have growth that they have to go through to get to wherever they're going to land.
Thanks, Jason. Somebody,
all right, guys, take
somebody,
care. Be good.
You know the rule: if someone high jumps 7.5, I want you to call back.
You'll be the first one I call.
Yeah. Thanks, Jason.
All right, guys, take care. Be good.
All right, Doc, anything that you wanted to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think with rookies, I mean, obviously I was one, and I think it's patience and time. I think you got to give guys, you know, some time to get comfortable and settle in. Thank God I was given some time, right? Like, I mean, because I was not only was I a rookie and adjusting to the NFL, I was adjusting to a position change and to a whole new mentality of switching my feet and learning different calls.
Plus, you were really young. You were like, what, 17 when you got into the
I was 21. Yeah, I was a young guy. I mean, I was very young. It was just so, like, I'm glad that, you know, I was, people gave me, you know, I had patience. I mean, obviously, you know, patience is, you know, it comes with, you know, a little bit of, you know, frustrations at times with coaches and guys that you play with, right? I mean, they expect you to get things right and they expect you to learn, and you're supposed to learn on a certain trajectory, which I felt like I was able to do, and I got better as the season went on. But early on, like, there were mistakes, man. There were ups and downs, and you had to be able to correct yourself. And there were definitely those times that it didn't look great. And I was like, man, like, this, you know, right tackle is difficult. Like, it's not as smooth as it looks at left tackle. And I got time and patience, and it worked itself out. So that'd be what I would tell people. Like, who knows what Golden's going to be? He could be fantastic, but it may take him some time this year. And that's with all the rookies. Like, give them some time, let them figure out, you know, themselves within this league and what they're going to be and what's going to work for them. And it'll eventually, they'll find their way. And that's with all young guys, though.
Third quarter coming up. I do want to mention Holtebeck Eye Center. Met with Dr. Aaron Holtebeck at their Brookfield office. He told me their vision care top priority. They've been doing it well for 20 years. But he said, we're not good enough. I go, you just told me you're really good. No, they want to help local patients with their eye care needs. And so they added to the team Dr. Nausheen Abbas so they can be even better, handling everything and handling the best. So don't mess with your vision. Trust all the experts from Holtebeck Eye Center in Brookfield near the corner of Calhoun and Capitol. Learn more about their services at holtebeck.com. Brian Bulaga, more Doc next.